Last week when we were introducing the book of Leviticus, we said that the outline of the book is very simple. In one sense it's simple, but here goes it. The first half of the book, or the first part of the book, is the basis of fellowship with God is sacrifice. Now he said the last part of the book, the obligation of fellowship with God is holiness. Now, again, if we were thinking about it going straight through, that would be the easiest way. First we'd talk about the sacrifice, then we'd go to the holiness. But the book of Leviticus is one of the hardest books, I think, to teach, to try to get anything vital out of it. You can say things about it, and that sounds beautiful, until you go and read it, you're going like, did you actually get that out of this? All right? Is that where you found that information? And so a problem comes there because you're reading through all these regulations and it doesn't sound like what I said. All right? Now, in order to make it clear, I think it's easier to approach those two subjects of holiness and sacrifice in the other direction. To think, first of all, about what holiness is about, and then the principle of sacrifice becomes, I think, clearer and more powerful. Right? And so we're going to start tonight by thinking about what holiness is all about. There are a number of problems with this, and the fact is that I found students don't tend to know very much about this idea of holiness. It's real vague in most people's minds. It's something like goodness, kind of. All right? What is a holy person? Well, they're kind of a nice person. They're a righteous person. And they come to all kinds of synonyms that they put in there that aren't particularly accurate. Right? When we think about the idea of the holiness of God, it gets a little vague. And I've noticed that it's not only true for you, but the reason it's true for you and it's true for me is because it's true for the theologians. When you read the books on the attributes of God and they get to the one holiness, it gets real vague. That's my opinion of them. You know, it goes a little bit vague because in one sense, that's my opinion, they wouldn't agree with that, but it's my opinion, it's not really an attribute in the same sense as the other attributes like love or mercy or grace or omniscience. It is what you say about God when you've collected up the attributes of God. When you look at what your conclusion is, then you say he is holy. It's sort of a blanket statement about the entirety of what you've learned. Now, there are some problems that we run into, and again, just I'll make this note quickly because it doesn't particularly affect our teaching tonight, but it is important to note. One of the problems on holiness in our thinking is the English language problem with regards to holiness because of the unique way the English language came into existence. It's a combination of Latin and Germanic languages. And so we have these crossed up circumstances, and that comes up with holiness. And the crossed up circumstance is this, that we have two completely separate word groups which express the same idea from the Bible. Alright? Those two word groups are the words holy, holiness, and all those along that side. And then there is another word group, which is the sanctification word group. Right? Sanctification, sanctuary, saint, all come from another word group in the English language. But all of those words behind them in both the Greek and the Hebrew are the same concept. And there's all sorts of interesting teaching about sanctification and holiness that comes up by ignoring the fact that it's the same word. It's the same Greek word. It's the same Hebrew word. So I just want to make that note. We'll go on. Last part of that first section, it says this, that the Greek and Hebrew words are not defined. Nowhere in the Bible you can say this is what holiness is because it says so. You learn what holiness is by observing what takes place in the Word of God. You have to collect the information. You can't go to a place and say, this defines holiness. But in this book, we do have, it comes close with regards to what holiness means to us. And so that's what we want to think about, and we're going to try to, this is a vocabulary lesson tonight. And I will work hard at trying to keep it lively. Because we have to go through, if you want to understand or want to start to understand the book of Leviticus, we have to know what's going on in our vocabulary. We tend to be a little off in our thinking. and then we read it, and it really doesn't make sense. It's hard enough when you have the right vocabulary. It's almost impossible without it. So let's look at two key verses that help us understand the concept, and that's the concept of holiness in Leviticus. The first is in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 26, and it says, "Thus you are to be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and I have set you apart from the people to be mine." That's the first verse we'll consider. The second verse has to do with the responsibility of the priesthood. And at one point in chapter 10, verse 10 of the book of Leviticus, it says, he's speaking about the responsibilities of priesthood, and he says this, "And so," this is their responsibility, "to make distinction between the holy and the profane, between the unclean and the clean." If we understand those two verses and understand the concepts there, then you can begin to look at the book of Leviticus. But we're going to start with the first. The responsibility to be holy begins with this thought, "You're to be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and I've set you apart from the people to be mine." All right, so the first thing we need to note about holiness, if we're going to understand it, is that it begins with who God is. It starts there. "You're to be holy, for I'm holy." Holiness is, first of all, a characteristic of God. Now, at this point, I'm going to say, honestly, I struggle to try to tell you what that is. All right? Because the word has, at its root, base meaning, this. Particularly in the Old Testament, the concept of differentness, of separateness. But the idea of separateness when it regards to God is this. God is different than anything you've ever conceived of. In one sense, He is the God incomprehensible. You cannot grasp who He is. That when you have your best moments and your loftiest thoughts concerning God, you have not grasped it. Right? This is something like that concept we had in mathematics of infinity. We use it all the time, and then we'll let that go to infinity. Infinity. But you can't conceive of infinity. I mean, it doesn't end. And there is nothing in your world, and there's nothing in my world that doesn't end. It has beginnings and ends. There's walls. Everything is boxed in. And we can say, well, the universe goes on out here, and it goes on, and we can see billions and billions of light years out there. But there's still the concept that there just has to be an end to it. So as a little kid, you sat there, and your mind was boggled by the thought of what's beyond the next star, then the next star, the next star. What is out there? And then you get to the concept of God, who is without limit, present everywhere in His totality. How about that? Present everywhere in His totality, but filling up the entirety of the universe. Can't conceive of that. Knowing everything that there is to know. Knowing everything that there is to know or could be known. And not having to recall it. Instantly holding all knowledge in His being at one time. Now that's different. All right? When I meet you and try to find out who you are, I've given in. I've just admitted that I'm getting old and I just have to keep asking. So in the conversation, when you introduce yourself, I usually ask you your name at least three times. And there's no guarantee I got it. All right? The idea of being able to hold everything in your mind. See, you're talking about a being which is different. Completely different. But there's first way we can think of it is it speaks about the fact that He's completely different, but He's also in His differentness completely better. He's superior. So the concept in one sense you could say completely different, completely above. But that doesn't really define anything, does it? It just puts Him in a category. He's a category by Himself. Now when the Scriptures speak about His holiness, there are three areas that they kind of combine together in this concept, and we want to think about those just briefly. The first is the power of God. The unspeakable power of God is a part, that there is no limit to what He can do. Is anything too hard for the Lord? No, there's nothing. There is nothing He can't do as far as power goes. The second is His moral perfection. And I want to put that in as a second, because when we think of His holiness, that is the one that most people, that comes to their mind first, is the thought of His moral perfection. But it's not, well, it's one of them. I don't know whether you put first, second, third, but it is only one part of what's conceived in the fact that He is holy. And then there's that third part, that He reigns. He rules over everything. That He has absolute dominion over that which He has created. Now, if you put that together, you come up with this concept that God is a completely different being. That is the reason, which we mentioned earlier when we were talking about the law, that the law would not allow a picture of God. It will not allow an image of God. Because the moment I fix a picture, I miss too much. Because He is not like. It is different than. No matter how grand a picture I can present, I miss something. And so any picture takes the infinite God and brings Him down to a finite place, and it ruins your concept. And so He won't allow it. He will not allow graphic representation of Himself, because it's harmful to human beings, because He is much grander than that. That's holiness. Now, we can't take a long time on that, because we have to get the concept of what does it mean in Leviticus, because in the book of Leviticus, the next part of the verse is what is hammered home. Thus you are to be holy to me, because I, the Lord, am holy. And he says this, and I have set you apart from the rest of the people, that's what the thought is there, from the other people to be mine. All right, now, what is holiness when it comes to us? Now, we can't be different in any degree like God is. We can't say, well, He is that way, now we're going to be like that. Well, I can't be infinite. All right? I don't have all power. I don't have all wisdom. I don't have that moral perfection that He has. So in what sense can I be holy? How is it that holiness can even be, I can even speak about that in my own context? I mean, the differentness is so vast. And so he describes it here. When it speaks about holiness with respect to anything besides God, it speaks about things which God chooses. Now, in number one there, it says, holiness needs to be set apart by God. I have set you apart from the rest of people to be mine. So there's the first concept with regards to holiness is that God chooses something. He picks it out from a group. All right? He picks it out from a group. And an important feature of this picking out that's going to come up as we go through this vocabulary here, is he picks it out from common things and makes it special. It's made special by his choice, not by what it was before his choice. Right? So he picks out something from a common thing. Now when he picks it out, the second point is this, it belongs to him. Once he chooses it and picks it out from normal things, it becomes a special thing, but it belongs to him. All right? And the reason he picks it out is he has a purpose in mind. He has a direction he wants to take it. There's something he wants to use it for. God does not just pick out things to possess them. All right? He said so many times here, he does not have knickknacks. He doesn't just pick them, and this would be nice to put on a shelf here. Everything he picks is with a purpose. And so those three things have to be noted there, because the first one, the fact that it's a choice and it's not by personal merit, means that holiness is a privilege. You can't decide to be holy. God has to decide first. Unless he takes action to give you an opportunity, you cannot enter in. Right? Now, the last one tells us there's also duty. There's two concepts. Privilege, but there's also duty, because once he picks me out and gives me that privilege, he has a purpose. I have to fulfill that purpose, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Now, let's think about some of the things that are picked out. All right, the very first use of the word holiness, the holiness group, in the Word of God is in Genesis chapter 2. Right? After the creation is completed in 6 days, it tells us that God chose and sanctified the seventh day. Right? He sanctified the seventh day. That is, Sanctify, is, remember, is that English version of make it holy. All right? Sanctify is what you do when you take something and make it holy. All right? So it says that he took that day and he made it holy. Now, it's an important concept. Is the Sabbath, which was Saturday for them, if you did a study of history of Saturdays, you would find out that Saturdays probably, I've never done the study, so I can't guarantee it, but I'll bet that it would work out this way, that it rains as much on Saturday as it does on any other day. That Saturdays have an average temperature. They have an average everything else. They're just an average day. Though what makes the Sabbath holy is not that there's something unique about that day. It's the fact that God decided that day was the day that he would pick out of the common week and he would make it different. Right? It becomes different. And his purpose in doing that, he said, he picked that day out as a day to rest. That was his purpose in it. Because once he picks it, he has the right to determine what it will be used for. It belongs to him now. In a unique sense. Now, the whole world is his, but in a unique sense, it's been taken out. All right, now, what are the requirements then? This is a different way of looking at this. What are the requirements for holiness? What does it mean? What do you have to do to be holy? If I am to be holy, what has to happen? Well, the first thing that has to happen is this. God has to choose you. He has to give you the chance. Now, Israel already had that, right? They'd already been picked out. They had been given great privilege, and he already made that clear. They had entered into a covenant because of that great privilege. Remember, we talked about the Exodus showed, first of all, the love of God in the past, but it also showed the privilege he was giving to them. And on the basis of that, they were to enter into this covenant. And they did. All right, so the first thing that has to happen is God has to set you apart. All right? Now, the second thing, and this is what we'll get to next week, for anything that there's been defilement on, anything that's defiled, anything that isn't pure to start with has to be purified, and that's by sacrifice. So in order for something to be lifted to holiness, we'll talk about that in just a moment, there has to be a sacrifice on its behalf. Then there is a third part. This is very important. The thing that God sets aside, he also makes requirements for it. And I have to treat the thing that's holy as a holy thing belonging to God, as different, right? Now, let's go through that again. Let's just think about how that works out. What do I have to do to treat the Sabbath day as holy? Well, yeah, I'm not supposed to ask. I can't do this. This is a class. I'm asking a question. I have to answer that, right? Okay, I have to. I forgot myself there. I was waiting for you to answer the question. But anyway, back to our point. What I have to do is rest on that day. The reason I have to rest is because that's what God says to do with the day, right? Now, I don't make other requirements. One of the problems in the New Testament times is people who wanted to be holy put other requirements on it. And so they defined what resting meant. You could walk this far and still be resting, but God didn't say that. You could lift this much weight and still be resting. You could do this and this and this and this. Now, there were some things that God said. He said, prepare your food the day before. On this day, rest. Eat what you already prepared. Don't prepare food on this day. That was a requirement. Don't let your servants work, because if your servants are working, even if they're not Israelites, you'll have to work to direct them. So don't do that. So there are some requirements he made, and you have to keep that. If you do that, you'll be obeying the command, and this is the way the command works, and it's stated in the Ten Commandments. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. All right? Remember it to keep it holy. They don't make it holy. And I don't have a right as an Israelite to say this is what you have to do. God says what you have to do because it belongs to him. This goes on all the way down the line. The nation of Israel was a holy nation. They had been chosen to have a particular relationship with God. And that's what the book of Leviticus is part, a great deal of the book of Leviticus, is setting out what the requirements are if I am going to fulfill my responsibility to God. He has a right to regulate my experience. And so here's a set of statements as to how I must do it. from the nation of Israel, the tribe of Levi was set aside as a holy tribe. Right? So the whole nation is holy, but in a separate sense, the tribe of Levi is holy, and they have special regulations for their life that the tribe of Judah doesn't have to fulfill. And you say, why? Because God chose them. He had a purpose for that. Because out of that tribe would come the priesthood. The priests were certain families inside of the tribe of Levi, which God picked out of all the families. He could have picked any one of them. There was no difference. Right? Just like Levi, you read through the book of Genesis, you find out Levi isn't better or worse than anybody else. He's just another tribe. He picks them out. From that tribe, he picks out certain families. And they have the privilege to be the priesthood. The priesthood, because it's picked out by God, becomes holy. And they have requirements on them. Requirements that the rest of the Levites don't have to fulfill, and requirements that the rest of the Israelites don't have to fulfill. But they're all holy. So you can be holy in a particular sense. Right? They follow through on that. So anything that God picks out is holy. He picked out the tabernacle, inside the tabernacle. You remember, they have incense inside the tabernacle. And he didn't leave that to chance. He, in the book of Leviticus, he gives a formula for taking different spices. I'm not sure whether they're spices. I don't remember. Anyway, the different elements that you put into incense, and you mix them in this proportion, and when you mix them in that proportion, they are holy incense. Right? The smells are the common smells, but when they are put together in this formula, that's what has to be put in the temple. And because that formula is holy now, you can't burn it in your house. Not that formula. Right? Because it's holy. And you have to treat it as holy. Right? Now, what that means to us, we get put this all together, is this. Every person who's come to Christ is a saint. They are a holy one. See, holiness doesn't speak so much, we'll talk about that in just a moment, of my conduct. It is as the details of my righteousness. It speaks about whether or not I have accepted the fact I have been set apart by God for His purpose. I am holy or not holy in the fact that I first, accept the fact that I belong to Him, and secondly, I do what He tells me to do with the life that I have. Because He has that right. He picked me for a purpose. Again, all the way through church history, men have thrown in their own views of holiness. So that one of the early holy men, I use this illustration because it's so ludicrous, but it was regarded, he was regarded as a very holy man. Spent years sitting on top of a post. There was. He just sat on that post. Years! He just sat on that post. Being holy. But he wasn't holy. He wasn't holy. Because he wasn't fulfilling the calling with which he was called to portray Christ to the people around him. I have to sum up in a hurry what our calling is. Our calling is to proclaim the excellencies, both in word and in life, of Him who called us out of darkness into His marvelous light, not to sit on a post. So although He set Himself aside, and this was a great sacrifice, there's no question about that. There's a sacrifice, I think, in sitting on a post. I can't imagine it. You could be a person who goes into a cave and sits there and prays. But if you're not fulfilling what God told you to fulfill, you're not holy. You can't make this up. It's His prerogative. You belong to Him. That's why in the New Testament the appeal comes. You're not your own. You're bought with a price. Glorify God in your bodies and spirits which are His. They belong to Him. And if the person doesn't capture that, then holiness isn't understood. So what does it mean to be holy? It means to be set apart by God for His purpose. That's one of the great privileges you have to speak to people who know God. Your life is never meaningless. There is nobody in this room that has put their faith in Jesus Christ whose life is wasted or meaningless. There is purpose to it. There is privilege to it. You have the privilege of belonging to God. You have purpose that has to be fulfilled. Now, that's the first part of it. Now, again, we could spend some more time on that. It's a great deal we could think of. But I want to go into the next part. And this is harder. I admit this is hard. Because when you go into the book of Leviticus, you come up with all these different terms, and they don't sound like that. And so I want to go over some of this. And again, I want to say that this comes from Wenham's book, Gordon Wenham's book, and it's extremely helpful in sorting out what's actually happening when you read through the book. And it says this. This is chapter 10, verse 10. It says, "You're to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, between the clean or the unclean and the clean." Now, there is in the Hebrew language a thing called parallelism, where they repeat something in the next phrase. In this case, it is not parallelism in that full respect. You cannot say that the holy and the profane, or the holy and the common, are equivalent to the unclean and the clean and the unclean, to reverse it and put it in the right order. All right? Holy things are not necessarily, holy things are always clean, but clean things are not necessarily holy. This is a whole different category. Now, interestingly enough, in the Old Testament, this surprises a lot of people, the word unholy is never used. Now, you would think, with all the cries for holy, now in the King James Bible, there is one version, this particular verse. In the King James Bible, it says, between the holy and the unholy, between the clean and the unclean. All right, unclean and clean. But they kind of made up that word. Or the word doesn't mean unholy. Well, it does, but I can almost guarantee that when you say the word, or if I say to you something is unholy, you are immediately going to put into your mind sin, right? Unholy things are sinful things, right? But Tuesday is an unholy day. What's sinful about Tuesday? All right? It isn't unholy. Well, it is unholy because it isn't holy. All right? But there's nothing wrong with the day. All right? You see, there's a formula for this holy incense. But there's nothing wrong with the other incense. There's nothing wrong with the incense. It's just that God took out of, and the best way to put this, is out of common things, He picked something out to be holy. Right? So that the opposite of holy in the Old Testament is not unholy. The opposite of holy is common. All right? So we have to start there. Let that sink in for a minute. So in case that is a confusion to you. And again, I want to say, the word unholy is not used in the Old Testament. The word that is used that we would think, or we think of is unclean. Right? Unclean is used, but not unholy. Now, you're to make a distinction, he says, between the holy and the common. All right, what would be an illustration of that? The name of God is holy. What does it mean to use profanity? Well, the word comes from way back when they actually looked at it this way. Whenever I used anything which was the prerogative of God and took it to myself, I have treated God as if He isn't holy anymore. Right? One of the instructions of Scripture is that the name of God is holy. Whatever you know God as, that name is holy. And you're not to use it for any other purpose than to address Him. It's one of the great forms of profanity of our day. Because we use the name of God as an exclamation point. That's unbiblical. It's a point of unholiness. Now, what have you done at that point? You've taken the name which is separate and different and holy and made it common. You've made it just another word. God should never be just another word to us. It's whatever your term for your Father and God is, that should be rich and full of meaning, and you should take steps to make sure it stays that way. And that's the point there. So that once I do that, I profane the name. All right? So that if a person who is a priest who's holy, that doesn't carry out the duties of holiness, all right? Let's say, let's go to a different one. Let's go to Nazarite. Nazarite was a man who set himself apart. He had the privilege of doing it. He said, anybody can do this. God gave the invitation for anybody to set themselves apart for a Nazarite vow, which was a period in which you would fulfill certain things. But one of the things you had to fulfill along the way is you stayed away from anything that had to do with grapes. Right? Well, that's good. So you couldn't drink wine. Once you drank wine, what you've done is treated yourself like just another person. Everybody can drink wine. There's nothing wrong with that. As far as Old Testament's concerned, they can all drink this. But you can't because you are holy for this period of time. You are set apart for God. To do this is to act as if you are a common person instead of a holy person. Why, again, one of the answers that we have to get used to, and why do Christians act certain ways? Because God said so. We are not the same. We're going over this again in Ephesians this morning. It's one point I would really like to hammer for Christians, that we don't want to be holier than thou. No, because the requirements of holiness require that you don't be holier than thou. Okay, well, you can't be that. You can't act that way and be holy. But anyway, that's on the side. But back to our point, we treat ourselves as if we want to be just one of the people. You are not one of them. You're not. When you belong to Christ, you've been set apart. You are in a different category. Now, are you better than there? No, you're chosen, not because of who you are, but by the grace of God. But once you've been chosen, you are different. Your life has requirements on it that the rest of the world doesn't have to keep. Because you've been chosen for a purpose. I've been chosen for a purpose. I have to fulfill that purpose. I will give an account for that purpose. Israel gave an account. Right? And God will hold you responsible for that. It's one point that you try to get in the whole book of Leviticus. In fact, remember last week we said that there's only a couple stories in the book? And one of the stories that's given, the stories that are given are illustrations of the principles. And one of the illustrations that's given to show that God means business on this was the story of the two sons of Aaron. Aaron's the high priest. His two sons are in line. One of them is going to become the high priest. Nadab and Abihu, all right? And one of the requirements of holiness was that God would light the fire in the temple. He would light it himself. And all fire in the temple, or in the tabernacle, was to be the derivative of God's holy fire. Now, if you went into the temple, you can't look and say, oh yeah, that is holy fire. That fire looks like all the other fire that ever has existed. There's no difference, right? How could anybody tell the difference between that fire and any other fire? Well, Nadab and Abihu got ready to go in. They took their censers and lit them up outside the temple and walked in. And you know the story if you've gone through there. And both of them were struck dead. God said, wait a second. You have treated my holy temple as if it's a common place. You have brought in, they call it a strange fire, but you brought in common fire into a holy place. That's wrong. You have to treat holy things the way God says to treat them. Okay? Now, inside, okay, you got the holy and the common. Common things divide into two categories. It's on your little picture there. If you have there, the holy is on one, then in the middle, it doesn't say common, it says clean. All right? Because common things that aren't holy divide into two categories. Clean things and unclean things. Okay? Clean things and unclean things. All right? Now, clean things is very hard. That's why you need to read the book. It's not the easiest thing to come to this conclusion. But here's what you finally conclude. This clean thing, cleanliness, or this cleanness, is the common experience of most things. It's just sort of the baseline condition of most things. Most things are clean, and most people are clean. All right? If something happens to that clean thing, there's a whole series of things defined, that it's either sin or sickness, that thing can become polluted or defiled, all right? And it becomes unclean. That's the process. It depends on your translation, whether it says pollute or defile. There is a translation problem here because the words aren't all the same. So you've got holy things, then you've got clean things, then you have unclean things. So here's the vocabulary of it. The path down from holy to clean or to common is profane. All right. So when the word profane comes up, that is taking a holy thing and it's brought down to a lower level. All right. Now, the process down from clean to unclean is called pollution or defilement. Right? You must not be defiled. You must not be polluted. All right? So that takes you down that level. All right? The process back up, if you have an unclean thing, it has to be cleansed. All right? That's just the vocabulary of it. And that does hold true in most translations. You cleanse them. All right? When you have a clean thing and you make it holy, the vocabulary there is you sanctify it. Again, you have to go to that other word group because holiness doesn't have a verb form. All right, you can't holify something. So you sanctify it. All right, it's a process of taking it up to here. Okay, got the idea. Now, before I go any further, I want to say that when you go to the book of Leviticus and look at it, here's the number one point. Holy things must be kept separate from unclean things. That's if you want to say, what is the point of all these rules? Holy things and unclean things must not come in contact with each other. Right? Now let me just say there are some things that by their very nature are unclean. And there's nothing you can do to cleanse them. This gets a little complex, but anyway, there's some things. Certain animals are unclean. A pig is unclean. You can't make any sacrifice for it to make it clean. It's by nature unclean. It's forever settled that you can't eat it. You can't change that situation. All right? Unless God changes the rules, which He did change the rules later on. Interestingly enough, in the book of Leviticus, things which are fundamentally unclean, which can't be changed, are not particularly dangerous. If a pig runs and bumps into you, you're okay. All right? Don't eat it, but if it bumps into you, you're okay. It can't transfer its uncleanness. But when things are pure or are clean and become defiled, the defiled thing has the capacity to pass on its defilement to you. All right? So that if you come in, a leper, here's a clean man, gets leprosy, he becomes unclean. If I contact a leper, I become unclean. Does that make sense? So that it can, the unclean things can pass on their uncleanness. Now, for that reason, the unclean things have to be separated from the fellowship so that they don't come in contact with the holy thing. This is a very serious matter to them. Now that maybe would help you understand what Isaiah is saying in his vision of God. Right, he has a vision of God, which is his commission. It starts off with the fact he sees the Lord seated on the throne. And then he hears this word, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. Heaven and earth are full of his glory. Then he says, woe is me, for I'm undone, I'm ruined, because I am not a man of unholy lips, all right? I am a man of unclean lips. You see, the worst of all possible circumstances has happened here. Now, holiness, God, has come in contact with uncleanness, and that causes problems. Read through the book of Leviticus. God is very strong on separating this out. It's very hard for us to follow through that if some of these things happen. There were many times when if the unclean thing came in contact with the holy thing, the person who brought this contact to bear was permanently put out of communion with the holy nation. That is, they're out permanently. That makes sense? They have been now kicked out of the group because they have dared to bring uncleanness in contact with holiness. All right? Now, what takes you downhill? Sin and sickness. All right? All right. Mostly it's sin, but there is a sickness issue too. And you'll have to do some reading to find out how that all works out. But it's sin and sickness that takes you down. But what has to happen to bring you back? All right? What has to happen to bring a person back into this? Well, they have to have, first of all, or they have to have sacrifice. And that's where the principle of sacrifice comes in. Because every time a defilement occurs, there has to be a cleansing again. And then from that cleansing, there can be the sanctification. You can't take a defiled thing and move it straight up. All right? That if I am defiled, I have to first of all have a sacrifice made to cleanse me of the defilement. After I have been defiled, there has to be another sacrifice made to lift to the place of holiness. All right? There's two steps. He wants you to understand that these two are separate and forever separate. And they have to be kept separate. He's instructing on what it means to walk with God. Right? Now, the requirements of the book go into a great deal of detail concerning uncleanness. We don't find the word unholy, except in the King James that one time, but it doesn't occur there. But now, I didn't take time to count it up, because I didn't have my computer program running, so I had to look in my old Strong's Concordance. I mean, I haven't looked at it in a long time. I opened up a Strong's Concordance again. And all I can say, have anybody ever read Strong's Concordance? I can't do it anymore. It's way beyond me. I don't know what that type is in there, but it's got to be about 5 points. You know, they're down in there, and you're going like, all I know is, all I can say is this, defilement in the book of Leviticus takes an entire column and half of another one. That's a lot of times. That's all I can say. You can go add them up. I don't know what it is. See, it's all about defilement. What defiles and how can I deal with this defilement? Because it is the obligation of separation, of fellowship with God to remain holy. Because they've been set aside for this fellowship. Israel has been set aside to belong to Him. Remember what we said back a couple of weeks ago when we were going over this? What was the call? The call was essentially a call to marry God, if you would. It was that kind of a commitment. It was to set aside this so you could belong to Him, to enter into a fellowship with God. They had the privilege of having that. And because of His calling and because of this covenant that had been established between them, He moved into the midst. That's what the temple or the tabernacle was all about. God was going to move in so that people can come close. And after He gives them this opportunity, He says, now, when you do this, there is a way you have to live. Just like anyone who enters into a particular relationship is going to have to alter their life with regards to that relationship. And He's telling them that they have to be a peculiar kind of people. This has to do, on one side, with demonstrating what God is like. So there is a certain feature of this, that these requirements are given there so that people can see righteousness in that nation. But there's a whole lot of it. There's nothing more than they now belong to Him, and they must belong to Him in every sense. Now, one of the last things I want to say about it is if you read through there, you will find out that those rules concerning defilement cover every area of their lives. There is no part that's excluded. It's kind of surprising that God goes into so much detail about so many private matters. We would think of them as private matters. But it isn't private because they were holy 24 hours a day. They were holy in everything they did. In fact, it gets to a place where at the end of the, in the book of Zechariah, which is one of the last prophets, as Zechariah predicts a day in which everything will be set right again in Israel, and one of the things that he reminds them of, he says, in that day, the pots that you cook in will say on them, holy to the Lord. Everything will be holy, down to your pots and pans. because every part of their life mattered. Their family life mattered. How they treated rulers mattered. How they treated their animals mattered. How they raised their children mattered. What they did when they were in a national convention mattered. Not only their relationship to God, but every part of their life, because they belonged to Him for a purpose. And the purpose was that God would use them to give life to a world. So it's a very complicated book. We don't have time to even begin to think about what the detail of it is. But as you go, remember those things. So what are the keys there? Holiness and uncleanness are the extreme ends of where people can end up. In the middle is a state of cleanness. But Israel isn't just clean. They've been called to be holy. They've been called to be holy. In order to be holy, they have to have that calling from God. But they also have, and that's what we're going to get to next week, they also have to have sacrifice. Because when I read those rules, I find out. If you read them, I read them, we all look at them and say, whoa. Whoa. I mean, there are a lot of ways to be polluted. There are a lot of ways to be defiled. Not just sin, but what it takes. I mean, if a person, your parent, someone in your family dies, you become polluted by burying them. I mean, the process of touch, somebody has to pick them up and move them. And they are now unclean, and you have to become unclean this way. There are so many different ways to become unclean. And what it tells us, and this is what we'll get to next week, that sacrifice has to touch every part of my life. Because holiness has to touch every part of my life. It's a wonderful thing to belong to the Lord. All right? Wonderful thing. It's there because He chose us. All right? And when He chose us, He calls to Himself. And He makes a sacrifice on our behalf in the Lord. Now, the great thing we'll see next week as we go to it, that sacrifice is enough to cover all that the Old Testament sacrifices covered. But once that's done, then I have an obligation. Right? Then I'm not my own. I was what? Bought with a price. And the goal then, again, to sum up what it means to be a holy person in the New Testament concept is this. Therefore, glorify God. Glorify God. In your body and your spirit, which are His. They belong to Him. Okay? Well, let's pray. Father, we come before Your throne and thank You for the great privilege of belonging to You. Father, we come and ask You to write these things into our hearts so that we will think accurately about life, about our bodies, about our souls, about every experience we have. Lord, we come and ask You to make us those who are freely devoted to You, freely following, freely fulfilling our high calling in Jesus Christ. We come and trust You for it and pray in Jesus' name.